Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 265, recorded August 31st, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Indeed, August is nearly gone.
And it's my sister's birthday, so shout out to my sister in Iringa, Tanzania.
Yeah, I don't know if she's listening, but...
I don't know, but she's liked the Aquarimax Facebook page, so...
There we go.
Maybe she's listening, yeah. I don't know.
Kind of sad when August is over, but fall is lovely too.
Yeah. And a good summer.
Yep, it has. Lots of good things this summer. So, today, we have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan... Mick in Carnforth, UK.
And in Kendall.
Oh, did he send it in from the shop?
Yes. So technically from Kendall. He lives in Carnforth still, but he sent the email from Kendall.
The one and only Carnforth and Kendall of Mint Cake.
Yes.
Yes. Jackie in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Dr. Bob on the North Shore of Boston in Massachusetts, who we haven't heard from in a while.
So. Yeah, so it's good to have Dr. Bob on the North Shore back.
Yeah.
That means we've got four different countries today.
We do.
It's not every day we get four different countries.
It's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Shall we dive in?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we'll go to Matt first. He says, as I sit on the computer stubbornly telling my lower back it is not in pain and that it really enjoys sitting down for long periods, I feel the need to send another update. So far, Mr. Back is ignoring my requests, but I shall persuade him eventually. I tell you what, Matt, if you figure out how to persuade your lower back to not be in pain, I want to know how. You tell me how, because mine refuses to believe me about that, too.
Yeah,
so,
I know where you are, too. Yeah. I have the same issues. I actually got a standing desk at work. That helps.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, it's a Varidesk. It switches between standing up and sitting down. It,
like, moves on a...
You just...
What do you call it?
You hold on... You pull these little clips on the side, and then you can just pull it up on the springs.
Like, adjust its height.
It's really nice.
So you can sit down or stand up.
So for a couple hours, I'll have standing up, and then I'll switch it to sitting down when I get tired, and, you know, it's... It helps.
It's nice.
Oh, here comes the Air Force Base, reminding us it's here.
Yes.
It's a good thing it's here. We need Air Force Bases.
They're good. They're just loud.
Sometimes they're loud.
That's okay. Okay, so Matt continues. First of all, I wanted to correct something Tony said about me. I live in southwestern Australia, not north. For if I lived north, I would have to wrestle saltwater crocodiles as a part of my transition into manhood. I think if I were a male, I would rather stay a boy. That's too scary. Sadly, we are fresh out of saltwater crocodiles in the south. We do have a fair number of great white sharks at my local beaches, but they mostly eat seals and show no interest in wrestling matches. They do show up every so often and frighten people out of the water, though. In fact, despite rumors to the contrary, there is a real lack of deadly creatures in my day-to-day life as an Australian. But I feel I must maintain the myth of the deadly Australian existence, for where is the fun in pretending it is actually safe here? Now, I laughed when I read over that paragraph the first time before we started recording, because we had just been talking to a friend of ours who spent a couple of years in Australia. He's an American, but he spent a couple of years in Australia. This was a long time. It was like in the 70s.
Yeah.
So it was quite a few years ago. But it was funny because he was telling us all kinds of stories about, you know, trapdoor spiders
and black
jumping
snakes
on him and what were they just called? Black snakes? What were
I can't remember exactly what he said, which kind of snake he said. I think he
said
a black snake.
Something really venomous, and they thought it was a garden hose and they just stepped over it and knocked on this person's door, and then he's like, oh, and then the garden hose started slithering off and this dog was chasing it, and I don't know. He had all kinds of funny stories. So it made me laugh.
He must be from North Australia.
Maybe. I don't remember where
he
was
at.
Exactly. But it was also...
It was just a funny contrast.
30 to 40 years ago. But yeah, it was a funny contrast. So. So the update on the 6-foot conversion is I got a quote, and it will cost about $3,000 to convert it into a marine aquarium. Ouch. That is not including any fish or corals either, just equipment and live rock. Plenty of saving still to be done to afford that conversion. Indeed.
Yeah, wow.
The planted discus aquarium is looking spectacular. I now have 3 discus left. I have got to say they are living up to their reputation. Given the gill fluke that wiped out all of my original 8 eventually. The last one to die had this giant swollen stomach, making me think there was some tumor or explosion of worms in there. I probably should have done an autopsy, but it smelled so bad I felt I just wanted to get rid of it quickly. All 3 of my current discus have the characteristic gill fluke wounds near their gills. However, they are not red anymore, and the last treatment I did seems to be helping. I've also read that strict maintenance can allow discus to live perfectly fine with a gill fluke infestation. The plants are growing significantly, and all the other fish look great. I bought some zebra danios, and their frantic swimming around the aquarium really gives the tank some life and exuberance. The largest of my discus spends most of his time in the top left-hand corner of the aquarium, as you can see in the attached photos. He has not eaten in a few weeks now, at least I have not seen him eat, which is worrying, but I am at a loss as to what to do to encourage eating. Live worms are supposed to do the trick, but even those are not enticing him. It is not showing any signs of malnutrition, though. He's not skinny, and he seems to have plenty of energy. That's interesting.
Yeah. There's some puzzling things going on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice that he's not skinny, and it's nice that he's got plenty of energy, but the fact that he's hanging out in that corner always is a warning sign, you know, or something that I worry about. For some reason, I didn't see the photos come through, but the fact that he's hanging out in the corner, you know, I always worry about that. A couple of things you could try, though. Something that I've used as an appetite stimulant is just fresh garlic. And maybe I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I'll take a clove of fresh garlic and mince it and then put it in purified water. Probably distilled water would be best, but any purified water probably fine. And let it soak in that water for maybe 24 hours. Just kind of let it brew. And I would put it in the refrigerator. That's what I usually do. And then I will put a few drops of that on the food that I'm going to give the fish. Now, if the discus are not eating, you know, pelleted food, this could be a problem. But then, like, I'll soak the pellets in it for a minute or so, and then I'll drop them in the tank. And the fish will gobble them up. And
garlic's antibacterial, too. I don't know if that would help or not.
It's supposed to have all sorts of benefits, mm-hmm. including antiparasitic benefits, but I'm not sure if it would have anything to do with gill flukes or not, but it's supposed to. And I can't substantiate a lot of those claims, but it does work as an appetite stimulant in many cases. And it may help just boost the immune system of the fish. It's supposed to be immunostimulant as well, so... That's one idea. I've also heard of people using vitamin B, I can't remember which of the vitamin B's it is, as an appetite stimulant, but you could use maybe a B complex. You get like some of the sublingual liquid B complex intended for humans. And this is, you know, something I'd do a little bit more research before I tried it, but I've heard about people doing this. I don't think I've tried this yet, so I would not just go ahead and do it, but I'd look into it. But using that to soak the food and seeing if that stimulates appetite. I've heard of people giving fish actually vitamin B injections. I have not done it for the same reason, to stimulate appetite. But it might be something at least to research a little bit. I'm not advocating you go stick a needle in your fish. I'm mm-hmm. just saying, you know, something you might want to look into a little bit. The fact that he's not eating live worms is really kind of strange. If there's anything you can get that's going to entice fish, it's usually worms.
Right.
But it may be something jumpy, like put some, I don't know, you don't want to introduce parasites in there, so I really wouldn't, you already got some, but I wouldn't want to introduce more. I wouldn't like get grass shrimp. I don't know if you can get like glass shrimp or ghost shrimp in Australia or not, if they sell that in the pet stores as a food item or not. So I wouldn't really do that, but you might even consider... If you're getting desperate, maybe try breeding some red cherry shrimp yourself so you have a couple of generations of healthy shrimp and drop them in and see if he'll eat them. But of course, he's not. If he hasn't eaten for this long, it's probably going to be too late by the time he gets them. Well, anyway, the garlic is probably the one that I go to first if I were in that situation and see what happens. Hopefully it works out.
Okay. He goes on and says, I have finally bitten the bullet and bought a mandarin fish. Those are cool.
They are. That's one of Kelly's favorite fish.
Yeah.
I remember going to a Japanese restaurant, like, how long ago was that?
We weren't even married yet. We were dating. You took me on a date.
So more than 17 years ago.
Yeah. And they had a tank.
They had a tank, and you loved that fish.
I saw that thing, and I was like, oh my goodness, what is that?
And we talked about that for a while. It that was one of the first fish she looked at and said, wow.
You know, psychedelic carpet from the 70s mm-hmm. or something.
And they are called psychedelic fish. I think that's what, when we were talking about it, you said, that fish looks psychedelic. And I said, yeah, it's sometimes called a psychedelic fish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, they're cool. In researching them, I discovered they are an Australian native, and their name comes from the vividly colorful robes that Imperial Chinese mandarins or bureaucrats wear. After a few days in the marine aquarium, he is settling in well. Last night, he was sitting near the front of the tank with a swollen belly full of copepods. His stomach has shrunken this morning, so that is a good sign he is digesting food. I have decided to call him Wally, for he is always difficult to find. I believe in America the character I am referring to is Waldo. Oh, like, where's Waldo?
Exactly,
I get
I like
it.
That.
Okay.
That's creative.
However, cool. I don't like Waldo as a name. Wally is much better and true to his and my Australian roots.
Yeah.
I think that works great.
I like it, too.
Mm-hmm. So, do you have any suggestions as to enticing reluctant discus? Oh, I guess we just talked about that. Okay. I feel like I should get him a sofa to lie on so we can conduct some therapy, but so far he's not keen on that idea.
I guess I sort of jumped the gun because I had read this before and I
That's
answered the question
okay.
before he asked
That's
it.
That's okay.
Well, anyway, we got to it, I
Poor
guess.
Poor Discus doesn't want to open up. He doesn't want to talk yet.
Yeah, I hope it works out.
I hope so too. Good luck, Matt. Should we go to Joe in Hudsonville?
Yeah.
Where's Hudsonville again?
Hudsonville's in Michigan.
Michigan, okay.
He's a Michigander.
Michigander? Michiganian. Michiganian gander. I don't know. This is fun to say. He says, last episode you guys were talking about the Axie tank. Here's a link to a company that sells everything. They obviously have aluminum screen. You were talking about lighting. Check out the eLive setup. The diversity of the light is amazing, and it is relatively cheap for the base unit that includes a couple of basic white and blue modules. Hope and these links are helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I looked that mm-hmm. up.
So we can put those up, too, in case anybody else wants
to
check
we'll
them out.
Yeah, we'll put both links up. Mm-hmm. And I started checking out the McMaster site. I'll have to look some more, but I was looking. They do have almost everything.
For Axies?
It's crazy. It's not
or
just for Axies.
For
it's
everything.
Like a general purpose store. They have over 500,000 products.
Wow. Of just aquarium stuff?
No, but they includes aquarium stuff.
Wow.
So I was kind of browsing through there and looking for something that might mm-hmm. work for a screen for the axolotl. So, but I was intrigued to find other things, like they have aquarium sealant that hits full strength in 48 hours, which I believe is shorter than silicone. I think
That's
silicone
nice.
Takes a week to be completely full strength, but I could be wrong mm-hmm. about that. They have aquarium pumps. They have all kinds of things. If you want to buy aluminum tubing for whatever reason, mm-hmm. it's not related to aquariums, they have that too. I mean, they got tons
wow.
of stuff.
Yeah, so, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and the eLife Pet, I checked it out. They some of the pet stores around here carry it, apparently, so we'll have to look into that.
Oh, good. We can see if that's something that will work.
Yeah, so thank you, Joe.
Mm-hmm. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, let's go to Carnforth and Kendall with Mick. Says, hi guys, just wanted to get your opinion on gut-loading live fish cultures, although I'm sure you cover it in the much-acclaimed Aquarimax Guide to Live Foods.
And I do talk about that a bit in there, yes.
I always feed my grindleworm and whiteworm cultures with a good quality fish flake or pellet food. That way I'm much happier feeding more live foods than the dry stuff direct, which I tend to do in all my breeding project tanks.
Yep. Well, let's talk about my opinion really quickly.
Yep.
Okay. There are a lot of opinions out there on this. And some people are of the opinion that gut-loading the food can only be good because you're getting these new and different nutrients into the fish, and it's wrapped in a coating of healthy live food. Other people are of the opinion that it doesn't do any good and that you should not bother because by the time the worm has digested it or whatever, it's just going to be more worm body and it's not going to be the same as eating the food. Well, I did a little research on this
prior to writing my book, and found some articles from peer-reviewed journals about how different types of foods and using different foods and then gut loading those foods modify the nutritional profile of the food. So it does work. It does happen. These articles discuss that they did analyses of the worms after eating various things, and they do retain those nutrients, and the nutrients are then passed on to your fish. So it works. And I've always, felt intuitively that it worked, and I always liked to do it because I felt like it worked. But there is empirical evidence out there that it works. So I'm right there with you, Mick, in your camp. Feeding gut-loaded live foods is something that I agree with.
Okay.
So.
Awesome. And he has sent us some pictures.
And some explanations. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, he didn't send the pictures. The pictures there because...
Oh, okay. You were looking up what he was talking
the
about?
The species, I wanted to show you the fish.
Okay.
What they look like.
Okay. Are these ones you something to go was talking with. About last time?
No.
Well, I'll just read it.
Yep.
I recently got a group of Gerard...
Oh, sorry. I got to add, there's an R, like okay. Gerard right there.
I was
there.
Thinking that looked a little funny.
Yep. It's,
okay.
It's just a typo.
Gerardinus metallicus.
Yeah.
Which have been producing many young over the last few weeks. I've been working on building up my live food cultures recently, and feeding these on gut-loaded grindle worms has definitely led to very rapid growth of the young. Even my Phalicthys quadrupunctatus have been producing more fry with a steady supply of grindles.
So you can tell why they're called quadrupunctatus.
Because they have four spots?
Yep.
As a sideline on conditioning live bearers, I have found that worms give growth a boost in young fish, but the fats in these foods on adults for long periods can be too heavy. A couple of years ago, I found that if I fed my knife live bearers, Alpharocultratus, on white or blood worm, they would be in great condition, but not have many or any young. As soon as I swapped to brine or mysis shrimp, I would get regular drops of large numbers of young. I tried this several times and named it birth control by blood worm.
Which I think is hilarious. See, there's a knife live bear.
Okay, cool.
Can you tell why it's called that?
It's
kind of knife-shaped to me. That's what I think.
It's fish-shaped.
It reminds me of rainbow fish. But do you see this long anal fin that goes all the way along the bottom of the body? That's not a normal thing for live bears.
Oh, I do now.
You see, most live bears, if they're males, it becomes a gonopodium and there's no fin going along there. And like in the Gerardinus metallicus, mm-hmm. you can see the little metallic spots and so on. You can mm-hmm. see the gonopodium, but there's no fin touching that part of the body. This fin just goes all the way along.
And that's why.
So it's kind of knife-like.
Okay.
Makes the fish look like a knife.
Well,
that's a cool insight, Mick. Thank you for sharing that. That the fats are really good for the growth of the babies, but they don't seem to be conducive to getting the adults to produce. That's cool.
That's interesting. He has a little PS,
mm-hmm.
which we kind of talked about, but I didn't know it was actually there yet. So we're just on the same wavelength as Mick. So sending email direct from Fangs and Fins in Kendall, home of fish, reptiles, and mint cake. Not from home in the one and only Carnforth.
So, yeah, that's why I thought it was funny that you were saying that, because you hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
I had, but it was funny.
Yep. In case you guys haven't noticed, which I'm sure you have... Plus, I think we've talked about it before. I usually do all this cold reading. Like, I haven't read your emails beforehand because then I ask Russ all these questions beforehand and then I have nothing to say on the podcast because I already asked the questions and I don't remember what I asked.
It's also more amusing this way.
Yeah, he likes to laugh at me.
No, I don't. I like to laugh alongside with you and be the target of the same laughter that you're in.
Okay. So, thank you, Mick. It's good to hear from you again. And we're going to Jackie.
In Winnipeg. Manitoba.
Canada.
Yeah.
She says, thank you for the betta and snail information you provided on the last podcast. I got a young dragon short tail betta, and he was very friendly. Does not seem terribly aggressive. Also bought a supposed pair of assassin snails. While checking out the quarries you recommended, I saw a dwarf puffer. What are your thoughts on a dwarf puffer as a tank mate for a betta? The tank is 30-gallon Wallstad planted, but less so since the snails have been grazing. Ammonia, nitrates, and nitrites are 0. pH is 7.6. Thanks for your help. Love the podcast.
Okay, well, thank you, Jackie. Let's look at this a little bit. One thing, I think the choice of a dragon short tail or placot beta is a good choice. I really like those. I really like placots in general, and the dragons are really interestingly colored. I like those. That'll be fun. Now, I'm curious about, you mentioned he doesn't seem terribly aggressive, and I wonder if you mean, like, when you hold a mirror up, he doesn't seem interested in the mirror, or do you mean, like, he doesn't seem aggressive to tank mates, or what exactly you meant there? Just curious, because, you know, a beta can be very... Some betas are so aggressive that if you look them in the eye and you get your face up close to the tank, they will flare at your eye. I've had betas that aggressive.
Do they see their reflection in your
eye? I'm guessing they do. Or your eye looks close enough to a beta and they don't care.
Or it's just, you're looking at me.
I can't tell, but they get aggressive if you just look at them close enough. That's happened. Look at them closely enough and they get aggressive. And so I'm just wondering, you know, this particular beta, how it is. Hopefully that other pair of assassin snails will help cut down the pond snail issue you're having. Probably will. I mean, if everything goes well, I can't imagine that it won't, because I've certainly seen that happen for me. So there you go. Now, Dwarf Puffer and a beta. Short answer, I don't recommend it. But let's talk about why, and we can see if that helps. Okay, really quickly. A dwarf puffer varies quite a bit in its aggression based on whether or not it's trying to breed, based on individuality, based on age, based on all kinds of things. But in general, a dwarf puffer can be quite aggressive to other fish, and it's usually not recommended that you keep it with other species of fish, with few exceptions. You can keep dwarf puffers in groups if the tank is large enough and you have various places where the males can stake out territories and the females will, you know, travel around a little bit more than the males. The males will tend to pick their spot. Sometimes if you have enough of them in there, they won't tend to form territories as much. But you generally cannot keep them with very many types of fish. Some people have success with Otocinclus, for example. But generally, once they get, especially if they're feeling a little hungry, they will go after the fins of other fish. I used to keep dwarf puffers sometimes in community tanks when I had snails in the community tanks, because then they would eat them. They'd eat all the snails and then I could take them out. But if I was not careful, because I'd usually rotate them between tanks, like, oh, this one has a few snails, so I'll put it in and it would eat the snails, I'd take it out. If I didn't take it out fast enough, as soon as it was done eating the snails, it decided to take out its hunger or aggression or whatever you want to call it, out on the other fish. So I imagine keeping it with the beta in the short term might work well if it's really distracted by the snails, and it would probably eat the assassin snails just as readily as anything else, probably attack them as well. They're really good at getting rid of snails, but they're also good at nibbling on the fins of other fish. I don't know how the beta would react to the dwarf puffer. That's also difficult to tell, because some betas will be fine in a community tank and others will, they'll pick certain fish and say, oh, I hate that fish, and try to kill it because it looks too much like a betta. When I was a child, a young child, I was only probably about 12 or something. I don't remember exactly. I tried to put a betta in with a delta tail guppy that had a red tail, and that was a really bad idea. It decided that the red tail, of course, looked too much like a betta, and it took a big chunk out of it. So then I separated them, and the fish recovered, the guppy recovered, but still, you never know what's going to happen. I would just think you are very likely to get some aggression from the dwarf puffer, and then again, there are some that are less aggressive than others, might not get any, but you're likely to get aggression from the dwarf puffer towards the beta, and it's possible you would get aggression from the beta towards the dwarf puffer. So I would say no. But if you want to get another tank, a smaller tank, like a 5-gallon tank for your betta, and then get a little colony of dwarf puffers going in your 30-gallon, you will never have any problems with snails.
That's true.
So there's something. You could put, 8 or 10 or even more than that in there, because they really don't get very big.
They're pretty little.
You could put 15 of them.
They're really
there.
Cute, though.
They are really cute, and they have a lot of personality.
They do.
I mean, if you want a lot of personality in a small package in a fish that you can't go wrong with a door puffer. They're amazing that way. I really, really enjoyed having them and having the way that they'd recognize you and they'd zip up. You know, most fish recognize you, but the way they recognize you is there's something different about it. It's almost as if they're carefully calculating and considering what you're going to do, and they're thinking about it. It just seems like that. They're quite fascinating. The way they move is just unreal, too. It reminds me almost of how seahorses move.
They're kind of like that.
Not even remotely related to seahorses, but just...
But you can kind of see in their movement, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very fascinating how they just sort of... They don't use fishy movements. They don't undulate along their spinal column to move, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They just buzz around with their little fins, and it's fun.
They're kind of like, hold it bent.
Yeah, and they're
like in a U-shape.
A lot of times they'll bend their tail fin, depending on, you know, what's mm-hmm. going on. But they don't use their tail fin a lot for locomotion, just a little bit for steering. And it's just fun.
Yep.
And once in a while you see them puff up, and it's so funny.
I don't think I ever saw Oryk puff up. He was never ticked enough.
I saw him.
He was too happy of a life.
Once or twice.
Really?
But not often.
What was
often.
He ticked about?
Nothing, apparently. I just looked into the tank one day and he went, vroom.
Just for fun. Yeah. He was just stretching.
Maybe.
Puffer fish yoga.
Yeah, because you never want to encourage them to do it, especially when they're in the air, because that can stress them out and cause them damage even. So I do it when they're in the air. But I didn't. I wasn't doing anything, and he just did it for no reason, but it was fun. So, yeah, we had Oryk, which we named because he sucked snails
like
out of their shells.
The vacuum cleaner brand.
And then we had several others later, because Oryk, unfortunately, once we got here from Hawaii, he passed away right before we got there, because I had my sister help us set up and cycle the tanks and so on. And when things got shipped in, I had her, you know, put everything out into the right tanks. And she said he didn't make it for some reason. We don't know why.
Yeah.
But right like a day or two before we got there, mm-hmm. He didn't make it. So anyway, blast from the past. Dwarf puffers, love them. But I wouldn't recommend putting with the betas for a little summary there.
Okay. Shall we go on?
Yes.
So, Dr. Bob on the North Shore of Boston.
Welcome back, Dr. Bob.
Yes. He says, greetings, Russ and Kelly. We have returned to the North Shore of Boston after a 3-week vacation on the Big Island. While staying in the Waikoloa Beach area, we visited the Ankeline Ponds on the grounds of the Hilton Hotel. I did not see any opaiula, but I did see many small fish, about 2 inches, in the ponds. I suspect that the fish would prey on the tiny shrimp. I could not tell what kind of fish they were. Apparently, these ponds are endangered from both natural and human processes. Naturally, as the ponds age, sediments build up and the pond turns into a marsh. However, development is currently the quickest pond destroyer. I found it amazing how these little creatures colonize in abandoned ponds as needed through the cracks and tubes in the lava that is below the water table. They must have an incredibly high tolerance for changing water parameters. I'm doing research to begin the process of setting up an opaiula tank. Any suggestions would be appreciated. Maybe you could do a primer on how to start an opaiula micro tank. Mahalo nui loa.
I love that you mm-hmm. said that. That's fun.
That means thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, that is cool. You got to go see Ankeline Pools in on the Big Island. I never did get to get over to the Big Island, and we had a few Ankeline pools on Oahu, but they're older ones, and they tended to be not lava pools, but pools in fossilized coral, essentially, most mm-hmm. of them. And I think there was only one that I knew of that was anywhere near close to our house, and I never saw any opaiula in it either. It was over by Punalu'u, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That place where you go around the corner.
There's that. Where is that? Cove and stuff.
No, on the other side, when you're going to Kaneohe, and there's that trout farm. It was near there, and you turn. There's that park. You go around.
Okay.
By the little statues.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. But anyway, there is one over there, but I never saw any opaiula in it. I only saw opaiula when I was there in, you know, stores. So, and the ones that I got mm-hmm. by mail and stuff like that. So, anyway, it's cool that you got to visit there and you got to see them. You were right about the little fish. The fish do prey on the shrimp, And so the shrimp avoid the ponds or the pools while the fish are in there. And it's hard to say which species of fish you were seeing because there are a lot of species that are there now. There are several types of molly, including one that's, I think it might be a Liberty molly. I'm trying to remember the ones that were in the pond over by the farm, you know, over there.
Mm-mm.
Well, there were a couple of ponds over there and kind of a ditch, and they had some in there, and I think they were some kind of molly. And they have, of course, tilapia are all over the place. Everywhere, even in, down in the storm drain. Seriously, they look down a storm drain
it's
in
true.
Hawaii, and you see
something
tilapia
living in it.
Kicking around in there. And there are so many baby tilapia that a lot of times that 2-inch size is about right. But I kind of thinking it might be one of the mollies, because there are a lot of those around. So, in fact, I have given lectures on Opa'ula before, and it's true. The ponds are seriously endangered. More than 90% of the original anchialine pools are now compromised in one way or another, whether through sediment or through invasive species that have been introduced to the pool and make it inhospitable for
the
Opa'ula. Or it could be that they've just been, development has ruined them. A lot of them get paved over, things like that. So, and you know, an interesting thing about the ponds aging and sediments building up and the pond turning into a marsh, if you have enough shrimp in there and you don't have anything else in there, a lot of times that at least in the original state of, in the pristine state of the Hawaiian ecosystems, that didn't happen very fast, because the shrimp would clean up the sediments. But now...
Did they eat them?
With...
What'd they do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like just dirt and sand?
Well, they wouldn't eat the dirt and sand, per se, but they would eat the algae and keep it from forming, thick layers that would then decay and turn into mud and so on. And so they would help with that. I'm sure eventually they would still succumb to just succession, because that happens with bodies of water over a long period of time. But apparently the non-native plants that have been introduced to Hawaii speed up the process, because the shrimp can't eat them. Like, there'll be these tough grasses and things that the shrimp can't eat. And so they form in the pools, and they die, and the shrimp don't eat them. They're too fibrous and so on. They
so
settle,
it fills up
turn into mud,
faster.
And it fills up faster.
Interesting.
And so they're finding out ways of vacuuming them out and removing these plants and so on from the pools, trying to get them out. But they actually have these muck suckers.
It's a gravel washer.
They'll suck out a lot of the muck, and they'll come in and by hand pull out the plants. One of the biggest problems, though, like you're saying, is human development in the areas of the pools, where they say, well, we want a swimming pool here, we want a golf course here, whatever, and ponds go by the wayside. But another big problem is that when the fish are introduced, they're extremely hard to remove. And the fish can actually be carried by birds. If you get a heron or something, picks up a tilapia with 200 babies in its mouth and flies over to another pond and happens to drop the fish before it eats it. And then she releases all the babies, and that pool is instantly colonized.
It's true.
There are problems with that. Or live bears, you know, you get one live bearer, one female, with a few dozen babies inside her. And another fish drops, a bird drops her in a pond, and those babies are enough to, establish
a colony
in there.
Pond, yeah.
And people also put fish in the pools, of course, but sometimes it's just not even people anymore. Now that the fish are there, the birds are doing a good job at spreading them around. So, there are a lot of problems. But it is amazing how they will, colonize. Like, there's a little island, Koho'olawe, and it was used as a bomb testing site some decades ago. And almost immediately, the crater that was formed by the bomb testing filled with water and Opa'ula.
Wow.
And it wasn't even, it was its own island. But underground, there are these networks in the lava and stuff, and they almost immediately colonized it. My understanding is that now that anchialine pool is no longer habitat for Opa'ula, but it was for a while.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Crazy stuff, like in Kahuku. This was a city right next to the town. Well, not a city. It was a town next to the town we lived in. And somebody picked up a brick and there was some fresh water kind of seeping up under it. And they picked up a brick and there was an opala under it.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever knew about that.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Or you dig a hole to put a palm tree in and there'll be opala showing up and it's crazy.
Water table's so high. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
I think that's everybody.
That's about everybody. I'm just going to go quickly on a little bit about setting up an opala tank because that's a definitely worthy endeavor. I've got four of them. Okay, one thing is to go to petshrimp.com. They have some really, really good, basic, simple instructions. There are lots of ways to raise opaula, but I really like the instructions that Mustafa gives at petshrimp.com. He calls them super shrimp on his site, but it's the same thing. They're opaula. And basically, he has found a really easy way to keep them, and it's very successful. I have had opaula since about 2004, 2005, right in there. So it's been 10 years or more since I've had them. And they have, you know, reproduced for me and so on. And I've had pretty good success with them. But I started having even more success when I started following his methods carefully. And basically, you use distilled water, you use salt, water at half strength. So you mix fresh water with salt water, half strength. So with my Instant Ocean mix, that's half a cup of salt water for full strength. So I just put a quarter cup of salt water per gallon. I use aragonite sand for the calcium. I put some black lava rock in there. I don't use red lava rock because they camouflage too easily if you do that. You cycle the tank first before you put any shrimp in. You don't need a pump though or any inner aeration or anything like that. No filtration. Just put a couple of Malaysian trumpet snails in there. Malaysian trumpet snails will cycle the tank. And they also are very resistant to the brackish water. They do fine in it. They breed in it. They're fine. Get some algae growth going. Once you get the algae growth going, put your shrimp in. You know, and they will start breeding for you. You only feed them about once or twice a month with a tiny amount of pelleted food.
And like a toothpick.
And if they don't eat it, you fed too much. If they eat it all within an hour or so, you fed about the right amount. And good to go. You top off evaporated water with distilled water and feed once or twice a month. And you're good. They'll start breeding. They'll go crazy. Like I said, ever since I switched to that method, I have had more success with opaula than I ever did before. I had a fair bit of success before, but now they're just nuts. Now they won't stop breeding. There's always new opaula babies everywhere. So hopefully that gives a start. And if you'd like me to elaborate, let me know. You have some follow-up questions for me. I'd be happy to help you. But petshrimp.com, check it out. Go to the Super Shrimp section of the website, and there he has a setup. A little bit of information on how to set up your tank, and I highly suggest using that. It's a great way to go. And I think that's about it. So, until next time,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.